Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, the Sunday night slash Monday morning version, depending on where in the country you happen to live or where you happen to listen to us. I am Scott Jensen, joined as always on Sunday nights by Jeff Erickson. If everybody could please rate and review the podcast, as help us a lot, helps people find the podcast, does a lot for us over there. So if you enjoy listening to us, leave us a bunch of stars, a nice comment. We would greatly appreciate that. There are some new comments that have gone up that have been good, so we do very much appreciate that. Jeff, it's March. It's March 7th. We're getting closer and closer to the season. Drafts are going on. We're doing TGFBI. I can never say that.
TGBY.
There
it
you
works.
Go. We got the Raz Slam coming up starting tomorrow. We got a lot of NFBC drafts. How are you tonight?
I'm good. So, this week I covered Tout Wars, the 12-team new draft that we launched on SiriusXM. Zola and I co-host along with Steve Phillips and Kyle Elfrink. Then last night, Saturday night, at first pitch, Florida, they had a Zoom coverage of the Labor NL salary cap draft, and all right. I did that 4 hours straight, me and Alex Chamberlain, and we had no commercial breaks.
That last hour of an auction must be tough.
Well, we only did 4 hours.
Oh, okay.
It went another, but we're like, you know, we signed on for four.
Yeah, the first couple hours, you got a lot of big buys, and it's kind of interesting when you get like down to the $3 and $4 players. That might be a tough sell there.
End game players are interesting in a nutshell. It's just when I've talked for 4 hours without a break, not so much. But it was great. It was great to have the platform. And Brent Hershey and Ray Murphy run a great event. You know, usually it's in person.
Yep.
They have all. It's like First Pitch Arizona, except now they're surrounded by the Labor Draft. But so it was cool to do that. Alex is brilliant. We'll get him on the pod again. I had him either last year or the year before, I forget which, but I'll definitely he's a super smart guy. He's in the RotoWire magazine, which you can get at rotowire.com/magazine if we have any left.
You're in the RotoWire magazine too, right?
I did have an article in there.
That was a cue for you to say so are you, but you did not follow it very well.
I don't follow cues very well. I had a girlfriend that tried to do the pretty woman cue thing on me one time. Like, she goes, "You're late. I'm supposed to say you're beautiful," but I didn't. I said, "I'm sorry," instead.
And that's hence, how I did hence why well. She never advanced past girlfriend.
Why? I never advanced, at least, perhaps, or maybe both. But at any nice. Rate, I don't look wistfully, but you know, I'm happy where I'm at. Let's just say
that's good. Yeah. I don't want to go down a wistful girlfriend path with you, but, so tonight we're going to talk about FAB tonight, a discussion that a lot of people have. FAB is very difficult, and it one of those things that you and I talk a lot of NFBC, but we can it kind of goes for any league. More home leagues are going to FAB, you see a lot of CBS and Yahoo and ESPN leagues going to FAB also. So it's a good topic, and right. It's one that people struggle with. I know a lot of people ask me, when they see me at drafts or talk to me online, like, how do you do FAB? How do you deal with this? It's tiring, all that kind of stuff. It's a long season. We're talking about some in-season management stuff also. We'll get to that. And we'll also do a little kind of update in the closer market in 2021. We're going to talk about some of the tiers and closers, how the overall closers are looking. It's we always talk about how closers are crazy and difficult and lose their jobs. I've done this for a lot of years, drafting in whether it be NFBC or other leagues. This is the toughest I think closers are, and the toughest that closers go away really fast.
I think this is the new reality.
Yeah, I think so too.
I don't think it's just this confined to this year. I think it's going to be something we're going to deal with every single year now, unless there's some massive sea change in the game that, encourages managers to behave differently, which I don't think it's going to happen.
Or more teams hire Tony La Russa and he clones himself.
Well, yeah, you need to get, because when you need to bring new, fresh blood, like 70-year-old blood into the game like that, let's keep doing that. Oh, wait, I'm ageist now here too. Sorry, I don't want to do that anymore.
Don't get yourself in trouble.
I can do that plenty of times. I was about to go ahead, just jump right in with two feet first there with another La Russa crack, but I'll hold off for now.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's go. Before we talk about some fab stuff, talk to me about Razz Slam real quick. It's the guys at Razz Ball. You and I are both in the league. It is a I played last year, so I should know the rules better than I do. But it's essentially the cut line NFBC format, best ball points. But it's I know that KJ Duke and some of the other guys in NFBC kind of molded the points league. I think Todd Zoll was involved in there too. Molded the points so they kind of replicate Roto a little more than a typical points league. So you lose points for making outs, essentially, at bats, and you know, all that kind of stuff. So
right.
Tell me, give me in 60 seconds, like what changes strategy-wise for you going to there, you know, rather than a typical Roto League that most of us play?
Well, the big thing is it's points. I mean, that you don't have to get a category. If you don't want to play this closer game, don't play the closer game. You don't have to. It's beautiful. Or stolen bases.
Although your closers can get three saves in a week, and that just smokes starters when that's happens. Oh, yeah. It's beautiful.
Right. And I won't be punting closers at the table. But here's the big thing. There's only two fab periods, and there's not much out there. It's like a draft champions. It's 42 rounds. You still have to start two catchers. It's the standard positions, but 19 bench spots. And so the big thing is they have multiple position eligibility. Fantrax does not. Knowing the nuances of that is super important.
Yep.
But you know, getting those guys that qualify multiple places, that's pretty nice. I mean, you're still not going to take Jeff McNeil and his great outfield and third base ability over Juan Soto as an example, or Scott Jenstad for defense purposes. But
that's true.
You will boost his value a little bit there. Other guys have two, three, and even four positions of eligibility that helps. Knowing the scoring system is important. 6 points for a win, 8 points for a save. You know, it's just tracking down those innings. Getting outs is important.
Do you get the feeling, since you're talking about innings and wins, I assume strikeouts are major just because you actually get a point for every strikeout in addition to getting points for outs. So
right, of course. So that makes sense.
Strikeouts are really ramped up, right?
Yep. Point per strikeout, point, and a point for every inning. I'm looking at this right now. Point for every out.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It counts double.
Right, yeah. So you get a strikeouts double out than a typical 6-3 ground ball. So yeah, that's major too. The thing I like for me is you don't have to worry about his steals as much. I tend to struggle. I'm drafting steals in leagues, always a weakness for me. And you know, if there's a guy that they've built it in so that steals are really valuable, so there's a guy that gets steals I like, fine. But I don't have to search it out. I don't have to grab Miles Straw at some point. I don't have to make sure that I look for Victor Robles or Byron Buxton. I kind of just draft the best players, and that is kind of fun.
Yeah, that is. I have a couple of leagues with Leody Taveras, same sort of principle there, chasing speed a little bit there. May not be actually proven that he can hit yet. We'll see. But he could have power, but I don't want to get stuck in the player analysis here too much.
That's too bad, because I was going to ask you what you thought about Miles Straw, but we can do it later.
No, we can talk Miles Straw. I could make an argument for him, but
Yeah, I could too. I mean, if he... Oh, that, I just got that. I'm slow. If he leads off, though, like, it's got to be a little bit interesting there. I mean, if they have him leading off right now, if he sticks there, you got to think that at some point they move that around and Cal Tucker maybe moves up and Altuve hits one and Tucker hits two or something. But it sounds like Straw is going to lead off. They're going to give him a shot to kind of earn the job and earn the leadoff spot. It's I don't know. He's got to move up a little bit with the lineups we've seen in spring training so far.
Yeah, you know that is kind of encouraging. He's walked in the minors.
Yep. Yeah.
He doesn't hit for any authority though, and that's the thing that scares me. Jason Tyner had a good walk rate in the minors too. So did Isak Snead. I made the Tyner comp on SiriusXM today, so I was fresh in my mind. But I wanted to add another one to the mix there too. I wanted to make sure we got equal time for someone else with a similar skill set. But he could be all right for a while. But I just worry about guys like him getting the bat knocked out of his hands. That pitchers at the big league level can locate a lot better. They're not going to walk him as much, and he's not going to hurt them. So then they start challenging him a lot more. And, the walks evaporate, and then what do you have? So that's the risk. But you got him in the 19th round in TGFBI, I think.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, he went in the 20th in mine. I was thinking about getting him on the comeback. Didn't get to me, but... You take one guy like that, like Victor Reyes was that way last year. You hope that it pans out. Reyes was a big profit last year. You hope that you get guys like that, but you don't spend, I won't bring up Scott's greatest hits because you can throw so many more Jeff's greatest hits back in my face.
No, you can throw Delino DeShields in my face if you want. I earned that one.
Yeah, but the thing is, sometimes you need that lesson to be pounded in your head sometimes. And, don't get a position where you need that guy. make sure it's a, okay, this is a nice bonus if it works out sort of guy. That's the way you want to treat guys like him. Now, of course, in Raz Slam, you know, he does very little slamming. You're not going to necessarily want to. I'm going to discount all the stolen base guys. That's one thing I will do in this.
The power speed guys go, even if anything, go up because you get that boost to the points. But the pure speed guys, I want no part of them.
Right. The other thing, and Mike was emphasizing this, I had Mike Alexander Thursday on the podcast.
I like Mike.
Mike's really good, and he really knows best ball leagues. You want 17 and 19, maybe even 20 pitchers out of your 42 roster slots.
Okay, that's a good tip right there. I think I did that last year. Just, you know, with best ball, like you just need one good starter, one of those guys, and it works that week. And you know, those starters at the back that you worry about in a roto league, you know, I got to use them for my starting lineup. If they get blown up, you know, they're not going to start for you that week anyway. So it's not that big a deal. Whereas, you know, in a regular league, you got to pick, and if they start and they blow up. That's bad, but at a best ball, you never use those starts anyway. So those innings eaters, I imagine, be pretty valuable this year, considering we're gonna have an inning shortage for a lot of starters.
Yeah. Now the thing is, when do you take those guys? I mean, we've seen in all NFBC formats where pitching just gets pushed and pushed and pushed. I wonder, because it's best ball, do you have a little bit more flexibility to kind of go volume instead of, like, you know, maybe build your base of 6 to 8 hitters first and then just take like 10 pitchers in a row.
Yeah, I think that could work. I think volume is important. I've actually I found some pitchers I like, kind of that 12th to 20th range. I'm kind of building that. I'm probably building that database now before we get to the main event and all that kind of stuff. So I'm slowly getting there with getting deeper with pitchers, and I'm finding some guys that I'm okay with. But it's definitely slim pickings compared to normal.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And, you know, but it's slim for everyone.
Yeah,
too.
It is.
The thing is, traditionally, the teens are when you load up on some good pitching, and you'll see some yellow brick roads. Now, will that start a little earlier? Maybe. I don't know. I'm drafting 6. I want to see what the draft brings me, but I probably won't be going Cole or DeGrom in this one, whereas I would in another format. I gotta, you know, we'll find out. I've got time to kind of run the numbers a little bit more tomorrow morning, but we'll see. How about you? What spot are you in?
So, excellent question. I think I'm 10th.
You've been spending all night studying for this. Don't lie.
You're
hiding it so well.
I think I'm 10th. I think I saw the draw and figured it was another league that I did terribly in a draft pool. So I just rolled my eyes and moved on. Somewhere, Tom and Derek at NFBC are laughing at me because I like to blame them for my draft spots when it's obviously nothing to do with them. But looks like I picked 10th.
Okay. That's not bad. Who else is in your league? Anybody I know?
Pat Fitzmaurice, who I think was in our football pentathlon.
Oh, he's a good player.
Good player. Yeah. And that's about all that I recognize, I think.
Okay.
I'm very bad at remembering names and stuff, though. I do that enough with work, so I try and not do that with my my fantasy life.
I'm Jeff, by the way. Nice to see you.
Well, that one I got. Oh, Shelly is in there. I know Shelly. She's a good player, too. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so there's a couple good ones in there, but I'm sure everybody else probably is too. It just says, I don't know. There's a Friends with Family Benefits person I don't know. Oh, Rudy Gamble's. Oh, no. Someone named their team Rudy Gamble in my league. It's not actually Rudy Gamble.
Interesting. I've got Vlad in mine.
Oh, well, there you go.
Or more like I'm in his.
He hasn't done very many leagues so far this year, so you're fine. He's probably not.
He doesn't know the player pool at all. He doesn't talk to us either, so we have no idea who he likes.
Yeah, no doubt there. That'll be fun. You guys will have some good interaction in the league then.
Yeah, Stan Sun is in this one. When the list came out, like four people saw it and said, dang, that's a league. Like Kenyatta is in this one. There's some good players in this one. If you can't find the sucker at the table, you're the sucker. I think that's it. I'm the sucker. I'm the fish.
Look at that. I got my 10th draft preference. So, yeah, that looks about right.
I don't think it was KDS. I think it is every number matches the preference.
Yeah,
so.
I think you're right on that one. So let's talk about Fab. A lot of people talk about it. It's a hard thing to do, but it's one of those things you got to do well, especially in an NFBC type format. Your draft is just is a big part of your team, but it's the in-season management is a huge thing. The thing for me with Fab, and as I go through, I think the most important thing to convey to people is that you need to do a bunch of things before you even look at the free agent pool that week. I think assessing your team is the most important thing you do. It's what I do every Sunday before I even think about looking at players. And that's, figuring out your lineup for next week if you have holes. That's determining who your drops are. That's figuring out what positions you need, figuring out where you're weak, what stats you need, all that kind of stuff. So I think that the problem people run into is I think that people just dive into the free agent pool and, who's there? Who do I want to bid on? Where I think the first three steps you got to take involve looking at your team, assessing inward, and kind of figuring out what you have to do.
I think that's smart. I'm just going to listen to you tell me what to do here because I'm not that great at that. No, I don't know. I think you're right about that. I think the exception might be early in the season. There's a breakout guy.
Yeah.
You have that one chance to get him. You got to just find a way to get him. And it's less about need and it's more about finding talent.
That's very true. There are those, like, you know, game breaker guys that you're gonna bid on no matter what. But I think even when it's those guys, you still got to figure out, you know, what you need, how much to bid on a guy like that really depends on what your team looks like too. I mean, if you have three shortstops and let's just say Carlos Correa, his rookie year comes out, like, if he's not going to be an automatic starter for you, I mean, it depends how much you bid on him. Obviously, you want to bid anyway because you think he's going to be really good. But, I mean, there's just so – people always ask me, you know, how much do you bid on this guy? I'm like, well, there's like 14 questions I have to ask you before I can answer that question. Where, you know, if you don't have a shortstop, that's huge. If you are trailing in home runs – I'm just using Correa because he was really good that year. But if you're trailing in home runs, like, that matters too. If you're trailing only in batting average, you're worried about his batting average, maybe not as much. If you have two shortstops, like, it just – there's so much that goes into what you need to bid that I think just knowing your team really well internally and that – the first thing you do is you got to map out your lineup for the next week. Like, do you need pitchers that week? If you have 10 guys you like in starting pitchers, like, you don't need to wait. The thing key is, like, fab takes time, but I think you got to, like, spend that time efficiently rather than jumping in. So if you have 10 starters or, you know, 8 starters and 2 closers you really like that week, like, you're not going to spend hours looking at the kind of marginal two steps because you're not going to use them anyway, or the marginal guys on the edge. Like, you're looking for guys, you're looking for a pitcher that, like, ooh, I think this guy might be good long term, sure. But, you know, you're just not spending 2 hours on the marginal guys, at least in that league, if you have 10 guys you need. So I think that, like, knowing what your team looks like going towards the next week, and that involves, you know, hitting matchup, pitching matchups, do you have any injuries? Do you have an ALDH going to an NL park? Like, all that kind of stuff just impacts so much you do, and I just don't know you can jump at the free agent pool before you figure out, you know, what your team looks like for the following week.
I almost think the first step might be look at the schedule. Look at those. Sure. Who's got 5 games? Who's got 7 games? Yep. Or 8, as sometimes as the case may be.
Who's at Coors? Who faces the Orioles or the Pirates or the Tigers? Like,
yeah.
It matters.
Yeah, absolutely matters. And, you know, like you said, the interleague games.
Yeah.
They matter. And last year, so here's the thing. Last year, interleague games didn't matter. I mean, it didn't matter that it was interleague because we had the universal DH. But now, and unless we find out at the 11th hour that it's changed back again, then that matters again. And Nelly Cruz, you know, there's like 5 really good ALDHs this year.
Yep.
And that's going to affect you all the time, especially because maybe Stanton gets outfield eligibility. Maybe Martinez does.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about JD. Do you think JD plays? JD probably plays outfield in the National League parks, right? Maybe 2 of 3 games, something like that.
Maybe.
Yeah,
but he could go all Chris Davis on us. I don't know. I mean,
Chris Davis.
Sorry, gratuitous. Too soon.
That's all right. He did enough good things for us. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, but you know, Franmil Reyes isn't going to play the outfield.
Yeah, that's a good one. And obviously, you said Cruz, Yordan Alvarez is. I can't imagine. Definitely, I can play the outfield. They may play from some first base, but like
that's what I've been reading some notes on that. They want him to be able to play first base.
He can't run around the bases yet. Like everybody's like, oh, he had a home run in BP. I'm like, well, yeah. Did he run around the bases afterwards? No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a problem. We're at March 7th, and he's not even trotting around the bases or like doing anything game wise. Like, are you worried about Alvarez yet? Being ready for opening day? Like, where do you fall with him? I mean, he's moving up a little bit in drafts. He's kind of a 6th, 7th round pick. It seems scary to me that I don't know we have any – he might be fine, and we just don't know it, but we don't know that he's not fine, which is concerning to me.
I am always not there when he comes up. I'm trying to see where I have him on my rankings, but I just know it's not good. You know, I don't think he's someone that – oh, I know why it's sorting backwards there for me. So I have Yordan Alvarez around 80, which never gets him. He's always like in the 60s is where I see him go. And, you know, 80 and falling.
Yeah.
Not climbing. And he's actually climbing.
Yeah, his ADP in the last 2 weeks is 78 right now. But I agree with you. I think that I've seen him in most of the drafts I've seen. I think in the 60s is kind of the price right now that he's taking BP and everybody's kind of getting excited about him. And he's an incredible hitter when he plays. Like that 2 years ago, the dude was all, he just mashed everything. But you know, he came out last year homered and then didn't play again. It's just I'm super worried about it. The utility only. I don't know. There's just enough there that I'm probably not getting him in any leagues.
23-year-old with two bad knees. I mean,
yeah, that sucks. It does.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, he could hit 330 with power, and then I lose. Yep. You know, on that, but.
Yeah, I'm one of those that I could admit I could lose pretty badly on him, but I think I'm willing to take the loss at this point.
Are you more willing to take him near the point his ADP or Stanton at near his?
Stanton.
Are you in on Stanton?
Yeah, I mean that's like 40 to 50 picks later. I think that gets to a range there where I'm more okay taking a risk. In the fifth or sixth round, I'm getting my closer. I'm getting a really good hitter. I'm getting my second starter. It's just I'm getting spots that like those are my foundation pieces of my squad. And in the ninth or tenth round, like you know you're gonna have some misses there. And I'm more willing to take a risk at that point. I tend to be pretty risk averse in the first five or six rounds if I can.
I'm gonna tell you something shocking here.
Please do,
because I know this is gonna cut deep towards you personally. Stanton, Alvarez, and JD all went for more tonight in LA AL labor than Nelson Cruz.
I mean, that just makes no sense to me.
Right?
And those are really good players. And I get Alvarez. Right. I mean, Alvarez is getting drafted before him, too. But like, there's no way I pay more. I mean, I guess JD Martinez, there's you know one bad year. But there's no way I pay for Stanton over Cruz right now.
Yeah. And the thing is, it just takes two to tango on that. It could be two people that really buy on that.
And it could have been the last good hitter up in a tier, too. Like, there's a lot of things that go into that. I do get that.
Yeah.
So talking about, you know, looking at your team when you're doing fab, the second thing to do is like, you got to determine who your drops are. And that kind of is a two-pronged phase. There's obvious drops. There's guys who are hurt long-term. There's guys who are just playing so badly, like I'm dropping that guy. There's a pitcher you picked up for two starts, didn't work out. You're going to drop him back. But then there's other guys. There's the kind of fringe guys. It depends on who's available. But I think, you know, looking at your team, you know, depending on how many drops you have, it depends how aggressive you look at free agents too. If you got four drops, you know, you got to really dig in on the free agent pool because you're really looking for players that are going to help you. But, you know, if your team's pretty solid, you have one or two drops, like kind of, again, you're looking at a higher threshold of guys. You're looking for, you know, guys you're really going to play long term. And so it really affects. I think that we always talk about picking people up. We don't talk enough about drops. It's kind of hard to do because every league size is so different. But, I mean, determining who your drops, and that's like the second thing I do before I get into free agency at all, you got to know who you want to drop, who you're willing to drop before you jump into who you want to add.
Yeah, I'd agree. And, you know, the thing is, and also look at those drops from you know, the week before to look for your free agent pool also because people will make mistakes.
Very true.
You know what? Mistakes are okay.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things I've learned is – you know, first of all, don't be too prideful that you can't pick up your drops. You know, admit you made a mistake, get them back. Liz likes to call that boot and rally. you know, but we were trying to come up with terms for that a couple years ago on the show.
That seems like right about the list field right there. That's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the whole point is you're going to make mistakes. Those bottom roster slots are meant to be churned.
Yep.
You're going to make some mistakes in them. And then, you know, you just hope to avoid the big mistakes. I think draft cost does matter a little bit.
Sure.
I mean, you really liked a guy to take him in the 16th round, that should give you a little extra pause as opposed to Mr. 28th rounder. Because guess what? The whole league passed on him 27 times before you took him in the 28th. So if you made a mistake on him, so what? Get him back. You know, the chances are, you know, the rest of your league's going to be slow to try to bid on him anyhow to get him back, pick him back up. If you miss on him, you miss on it. And, you know, this happens a lot with save spec.
Yep.
You know, you guess one guy's going to be the closer. He isn't getting closing. He isn't getting save chances. You give up on him, and then he gets a save the next week. Okay, fine. You know, you have to go back after me. And it's a recoverable mistake. The mistake you can't recover from is not bidding on that free agent that can really help you and carry you the rest of the way. That is the mistake that you can't make.
I think it's Scott Pianowski who says it. If you at the end of the year, if you don't have a couple drops you regret, it probably means you weren't aggressive enough picking people up. And it's like one of those things, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to drop someone who ends up having a pretty good year. But I tell you what, those guys you're going to pick up and, you know, taking shots on people early, that's going to be a big benefit. You're going to hit on some of those. And that, you know, you got to be aggressive with those guys. If you try and wait for, I want to see one more start, I want to see another week of games, you're probably going to end up not getting that guy because someone else is going to grab him a week early than you.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, if you're making more moves than everybody else, and you're good at making moves, well, guess what? You're going to have more opportunities for profit. And the fact is, we're all doing this because we think we know the player pool better than our competitors.
Yes,
it may not be true. You know, poker. You know, casinos were built on logic like that. But
very true.
Here, you've decided to make that decision to play in the first place. You've already made that decision to play. Now, then you should be going aggressively and trusting yourself here.
Sure.
And the more chances you do this, the more chances you get to analyze the player pool, by the way. There's an ancillary benefit. You educate yourself on every player that you're digging in on.
That's true, too. So last thing I want to mention before we talk about kind of jumping into the free agent pool, you got to figure out what you need, whether it be positional, like if you need a shortstop, you need a middle, if you need a fifth outfielder that week, whatever it may be. And you got to look at, do you need a short-term fix? Or do you need a long-term fix? That depends who you bid on. If it's your short-term fix, you can pick up, I don't know, pick up, you know, shallow league Miles Straw going to a good park. He's not going to hit home runs. But someone, you know, if you're short-term, you're looking for someone to go into Coors, going to Yankee Stadium, facing the Tigers, facing the Orioles, whatever it may be. If you're looking for someone long-term, you know, if you have a serious injury, you got to drop an outfield or something like that, it changes who you're looking at. I mean, if you're looking for a long-term fix, you're looking for someone that you think could, you know, be a starter for you every week, could grow into position, maybe can grow into more playing time. You don't care as much about that week per se. But it really depends on, you know, what position you need. That really goes with pitchers too. You know, if you have, you got to look at your lineup. If you have 8 pitchers that week, you got to be aggressive about finding someone. So that really goes in there. And the other thing is figure out what stats you need. And then, you know, this is important to not freak out about the first month of the season. Like if you're low in home runs after a month, you like your team coming to the draft, like don't freak out. Guys hit, you know, one home run in a month and then hit 8 the next month. But, you know, if you can tell you obviously have a deficiency, you got to look at that every week. And, you know, when you go into the player pool, you know, you're especially looking for home runs or stolen bases or saves, whatever maybe you're lacking in. And you need to get some context with that too. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, I have 8 points in RBIs. You know, who should I pick up? I'm like, well, if you have 8 points in RBIs, did you have 15 2 weeks ago and you're really falling? Or did you have 2 weeks ago and you're like hot and you're doing well? So like saying you have 8 points can mean so little. Like you might have, maybe you have 8 the whole time. You do need to pick someone up. If you're like trending up and you picked up someone 2 weeks ago that's really doing well and you're doing well, that it's just, I think that I actually keep a spreadsheet of where I am in each league week by week so I can tell where I'm trending. I know that I'm a nerd. I know I'm a nerd, so you're giving me a face light right now. The problem with video chat is I can just tell you judging me now. But I can just tell them.
I'm always judging you.
If I have a 3 in batting average and I did all year, that means something different to me than if I have fallen. I'm obviously doing something wrong. I need to adjust. So there's just, I think it helps me that I can see if I'm, you know, maybe I'm like, oh, I need power and I do that and I see myself falling in steals. It just helps me kind of visualize where I am in each category and how I'm trending, which to me is helpful, even if you're judging me.
No, I'm not judging you, Scott. I just envy you having the time that you have to do all that, and maybe that you don't play in as many leagues or something.
I think it's the secondary because I probably don't have the time, but I just do it anyway.
Right.
I don't sleep very much, so there is that.
Yeah, I sleep more than I used to.
That's good.
The kids are older.
Yeah,
you'll get there someday.
Yeah, I got a long ways till that.
How old is she now? 6?
She turned 5 in November. We just did kindergarten applications this week, so it was it's quite the moment. Yes.
Well, my youngest just got into the high school of her choice, so we're pretty stoked about that.
Congrats on
Friday
that! That's
was
awesome.
High school letter day.
It was kindergarten letter day too.
Yeah.
I didn't know kindergarten letter day was a thing, but apparently it is. Yeah. 5 o'clock on Friday, all emails from kindergartens coming. I was like, "What is going on?"
And you got into all the ones you wanted, I'm sure.
There were 2 that she applied to, and she did get into both of them, so she was happy about that.
Okay, good.
So before we jump into the player pool, I want a quick note from our sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy baseball is here. You got a lot to check out with these new best ball leagues on Underdog. Best ball is the ultimate test of your live draft skills. There's no in-season management. That's right. Draft your team, and Underdog automatically credits you with your best performing players every week. You don't need to play the waiver wire or worry about trades. It's just the draft. Who doesn't love drafting? In Underdog Best Ball, you can draft as many times as you want because you don't have to do any roster management, saving you loads of time. Underdog's best ball leagues are drafting right now, starting at just $3. Once the season starts, Underdog also has daily fantasy and an all-new pick'em game. Go download the Underdog app now to get in some best ball before the season starts. Enter promo code ROTOWIRE with your first deposit, and Underdog will honor a money-back guarantee during your first month. Love Underdog or get your money back with promo code ROTOWIRE. Search Underdog in your app store and enter promo code ROTOWIRE. So, Jeff, you've looked at your team. You decide what you need, where you need to go. You know, you're in first place. You're in 12th place. You know, it affects what you do. You jump into the player pool. How do you start with that? I mean, it can be overwhelming. You know, you got 500 position players that come up on your screen. How do you go about kind of figuring out what you want, what you need?
Typically start with pitching.
Okay.
I typically start with, if I need the closer, I figure that's the easiest to look for first. So I'll just do that. And the thing is, the benefit to having so many leagues is I kind of know the player, like the free agent pool. There'll be some like, oh, he's available sort of guys every once in a while. But for the most part, you go through it once or twice, you got a pretty good feel already. Sure. Like, okay, I know, is this guy available? You know, you're taking notes. I do like to write down or, you know, have a list of guys like, okay, check to see if this guy's available. Check to see if that guy's available.
During the week as you're like doing shows and stuff and jobs open up? You're like, I'm going to jot this down, make sure I look at this guy on Sunday?
I like to think that I do, but I don't. I mean, I think it's a great idea, and you should do that. It would probably save me time in the long run. But and the thing is, I do have a couple Thursday night fab leagues too. Peter Schenke's trying to change the world, or at least the industry, and try to encourage Thursday night fab. But it doesn't seem like that's going to change anytime soon. But my home leagues have that. So
Thursday night fab would be tough.
Yeah. But so here's the reason why it works well. Sundays are often family days.
No, but Thursdays are work days. That's tough.
Yeah, but if it's late enough at night.
Not everybody works in fantasy baseball, Jeff.
I know. I'm aware of that. And
I get the family day thing is tough, too, because, I mean, everybody's like, oh, I'm spending 9 hours on Sundays working on fab. I'm like, yeah, that's hard if you have wife and kids or multiple kids, whatever it may be.
Right.
Yeah, that's tough to, like, block out that day for six months.
Yeah, mix in like youth soccer. Julia's starting to get close to that. Yeah. So, you know, it will be in the fall. She should do AYSO. I'm a big fan. But anyway,
I need all these sports to open up and we can do it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're getting there.
Yeah. We are.
In fact, we've been, you know, inching towards it. We've been doing some practice sessions, but okay.
Oh, nice.
I'm far afield again. but things are going well. It's getting closer. So I start with the closers first. Then I hit starting pitchers. I look for the two-star starters. I look for, I look to see who's gotten strikeouts lately. And sometimes is a quick, dirty search. I look at ownership percentage. I think that's a Scott trick that I started doing a lot more. It's not great for a guy that gets called up, but it's great for guys that have been pitching for a while.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's interesting. And I want to give some props to your RotoWire, the projected starters grid. I think it's the best one in the industry. And I'd only say that if it's actually true. And I think that I would only say that way. The way the starter grid you guys do is like updated literally constantly all day long as news comes out and stuff. It's a really good resource. So if you do happen to subscribe to RotoWire, hopefully you do. It's a really good source. If you're looking for two-star pitches, you scroll down that list and boom, boom. You can it's really easy. It's really simple. It's updated constantly, which I think is the most important part. There's a lot of sites that have good lists but don't update as often. And as you get into Sunday afternoon, news is coming out. Like, I just need somebody to update that for me. And you guys do a great job with that.
Oh, thanks. Jason and Darren Brown, it was their brainchild to start that. They've been longtime RotoWire writers. One of our original beat writers. They still do a lot of work for us. But now we have, the way this business is, we have full-timers like watching that all the time too. Because it used to be like, okay, a daily update. Okay, great. This is awesome. Now it's like, this happened 10 minutes ago. You don't have this in your grid?
Well, yeah. I mean, if news comes out at 5:30 on a Sunday that someone is now moving it from Wednesday to Tuesday and they pitch twice that week, that's got to be updated. If you're going to be a good site, that's got to be updated. It's just the way it works these days. And it's
when someone
gets
scratched, that's huge.
Yeah. Everybody moves up a day, everybody moves back a day. You get a rain out and you get your managers announcing who's going to start instead. It's just there's a lot that goes into that. And not having to go to every single beat writer on Twitter to find it and go to the grid is a lifesaver.
Yeah, it is. It's one of our better tools.
Yeah. So then you're talking about offense. I tend to go – I usually sort by the last 2 weeks or the last week, like somewhere in there so I get the range. And I sort by at-bats to start. Just want to see who's playing. Who do I not know? I mean, there's 30 teams. I watch a lot, but I can't watch every team. And, as I see, oh, my, this guy had 28 at-bats last week. I go in, boom, to see what he did, all that kind of stuff, see where he's hitting in the lineup. I think sorting by at-bats is a really good, starting point to just kind of figure out who's playing, who's getting playing time. And then bidding amounts. I think that's the hardest part. People always ask me, how do you know when to bid 35 someone or 105 on someone? And the answer is you don't really. Every league is very different. You and I talk fab bidding, every Sunday night during the season. We'll talk about our online leagues and one of us have someone go for 212, and then we'll go for 46. And it's just like, there's no way to really know. My best way to look at it is, are you looking at a short-term ad or are you looking for a long-term ad? If it's someone a long-term ad, then I really get a lot more aggressive. A short-term ad, I am, very rarely above $30 for someone. I think like, two-star pitcher, maybe 30 to 40, somewhere in there. But my biggest way I look at it is if I click on the, free agent bid results, I want to be happy that I got some of the price I got him. I never want to log on and be like, crap, I actually got that guy for the bid. So that's how I play it. And if I feel that way, I actually lower the bid. So it's a weird little thing I do that, I want to get someone at a price that I think is a good, not just a good deal, but I think something that makes sense for my team. And that may be $600 for a player that I need, and I need something that they provide. But I want to be happy that I won that bid. So I want to win my top bids when I do them, knowing it's never going to happen. But that's kind of how I go into it, rather than trying to win the bid by a dollar. You're just never going to do that, despite what people think.
Yeah, Every once in a while you get lucky and you do that, but it's not because you're brilliant design more often than not. It's just, I mean,
it's good you're in the right ballpark of where someone is,
right,
but like
for sure.
Actually winning by $1 or $2, that is just blind luck at that point, of course.
Mm-hmm. But it feels so good when
it,
you do.
It feels great because it's like the perfect bid. There's nothing worse than when you bid $125 on someone, then the backup bid is $4. It's just you. But at that point, you did something. You probably did something wrong. Like you clearly.
What am I missing here?
Yeah, you're probably missing something. If you're in a 15-team main event league and you're the only one that bid high on somebody, like there's probably something that you missed there.
Yeah, and usually it's the closer that I've or the speculative closer that I've missed on something. Like, oh, that's why everybody's cold on.
Oh, he was warming up in the sixth inning. Fantastic.
Oh, man. Yeah, and I think that's like the biggest hole I have is, or at least I should say my most wasted fab money. It might be true for everyone, too.
It's true for a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah, I've spent more on speculative closers over the years, and, it's like, well, just get closers early in draft. Fix that. Okay, good luck with that.
We're about to talk about that.
I thought I'd segue for you.
A lot easier said than done. So
yeah.
Real quick, just talk about some in-season management before we get to closers. I think the key with in-season management is, A, you've got to grind and spend the time on doing it. There's a lot of people like, mm-hmm. I set my lineup in 5 minutes this morning. I'm like, yeah, well, you just miss something. You're not seeing everything if you do that. But the key is know your rules. If you play in a daily league, that fully affects how you deal with the back end of your lineup. Like, you play in a daily league, your fifth outfielder should not be someone you spend a pick on. It should be someone that you just kind of rotate and stream on. If you have unlimited moves, then you should always have someone there that is playing at Coors or Yankee Stadium or a great pitching matchup or a lefty-righty. Like, you get someone like Mike Brousseau against a lefty, and like that's a perfect spot. You can just use somebody. So it just – daily versus weekly just changes a lot. So know your rules is kind of – everybody says that, but it's kind of the key thing. Like in NFBC, we're allowed to make Friday hitting moves. So, know that – make sure you have as many as you can injuries affected. Make sure you have backups so you can take guys out. And if you have a fringy fifth outfitter, make sure you have another couple outfitters so you know that over the weekend you can switch it for someone. Obviously, if you got the Nelson Cruz, JD Martinez type that might not play, that's important too. And every Friday, I actually go through all my guys that aren't like solid start. Like, I don't, if it's Bryce Harper, I'm not going to take him out no matter what anyway. Mm-hmm. But like any kind of fringy guy, so it's usually like maybe my last five hitters and then my four bench guys. I actually look and I write it down because I'm old and do it that way. But I write down who the matchups are on the weekend. It helps me notice, like, I've got a lefty that may sit against lefties that faces three lefties this weekend. I'm like, oh, well, that's someone I need to take out. So you look at like
Jock Peterson.
Exactly.
On line one.
Yeah. Yep. Apparently he might play every day this year, but I'll believe that when I see it. I don't know if that's good or not.
Yeah. I was just going to say, so he's sitting against lefties this year and you get two lefties on the weekend out of three, you're probably sitting him. Yeah.
I mean, it depends who it is. If it's, Clayton Kershaw versus Ted Lilly or someone like that, it's different, but
Ted Lilly. Oh, he's still wow. Late.
It was the
that's a nice
it was
ball.
The biggest like poo slinging lefty I could think of. But it obviously depends. But I actually write down, I look at the matchups, and if I have someone that's kind of fringy and is facing Strasburg, Scherzer, and Corbin on the weekend, like that matters. Like all of a sudden I'm looking like, well crap, that's 2 for 12 maybe, and someone might hit a homer off Scherzer or something like that. But if I got someone else that's maybe a little bit lesser player but facing the Orioles or the Tigers, like that's a switch that I make. And there's some weeks I'll lose on that, but over the course of the season, I'm gonna win on those kind of matchup things, and I play those a lot during the season.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely important, knowing the platoon differences there. And having the guys, the problem is you can't have enough guys at every spot. But
you can.
I like to have one outfield eligible bench bat, one middle, one corner.
I do too. Those few guys that are corner and middle are really sweet. Or like an outfielder or second base. Like those guys are really nice because all of a sudden it gives you an extra spot. You kind of have a free spot to work with there. You can pick up anybody.
Extra pitcher.
Yeah, an extra pitcher or another random off another outfielder. Then maybe you can swap more and you can do all kinds of stuff there. But I'm at the point now with NFBC, and I've kind of learned this over the years. I treat the offense as two different, fully different periods. Like I just on Monday, I'm building Monday through Thursday. On Friday, I'm building Friday through Sunday, and I don't even worry about it for a 7-day week because I know on Friday I'm going to kind of reset and look at everything again. And if you're in your free agency and you see that someone on the weekend that gets a great series, that's someone you can maybe slide through a little bit earlier. If you see someone a week ahead of time that's going to go to Coors, you can get someone and you kind of play matchups there. And I think it's really important because there's so many leagues that come down to two home runs or three RBIs or four runs. Like we say it, but it actually happens every year that you see someone lose or win a league by one run. And everybody's like, oh, if I just got that one run over the last weekend. But like those runs in May count the same. And it sounds cliched, but giving up a zero in May counts as much as zero in September, which you'd never do. But in May, you're like, oh, I don't care about this. We're 6 weeks in. I'll figure it out. And it's just don't do that.
They all count the same.
They do.
So let me ask you this. Catchers, I think they're different. Say if you invest in a catcher. Let's call him Sean. Okay. For instance, right. Because you may have a guy named Sean.
His lungs might not be the best, but we're hoping they get better soon.
So in May he has a problem with that, and you know he's going to be out a month. How aggressive are you digging into that catcher pool on the waiver wire in a 15 teamer or 12 for that matter, but a 15 teamer? We know it's going to be pretty ugly.
How long is he out? A month.
A month.
So we're talking about Sean Murphy, so that's about a 10th to 12th round pick. I'm probably in May, I'm holding that, and I'm picking up another catcher because I'm not going to take a zero for that amount of time.
You're going to carry the three catchers.
I will. A month would probably be the extent of it, though. If it's like a 6 to 8 week injury, I'm probably dropping Murphy at that point.
It's always the toughest call.
And if it's August, I'm probably dropping Murphy even if it's out a month, because it's just by the time he comes back and all that kind of stuff. And if they say a month, it's probably 6 weeks, especially with a catcher. So it has to be early on. It has to be fairly short term. And it has to be someone that I took maybe in the first, say, 12 rounds. If I'm just going to use Omar Narvaez as an example, and he gets hurt for a month, that's like the easiest draw. I'm just dropping that and picking someone else up.
Yeah. When someone held a gun to your head and forced you to take Omar Narvaez, then yes, at least you get the drop.
Well, I was trying to think of someone that was like
in your face.
I was trying to think of someone that was like, you know, 18th to 22nd round rather than, you know, Elias Diaz in the last round. I don't know. Use whatever name you want to use. I don't know. Tom Murphy. Someone that, you know.
You're going to throw Tucker Barnhart in my face, but that's okay. Tyler Stevenson, though, on the other hand. Oh, man. I'd be like, I don't know. It's going to be a tough call.
Let's go. We'll go like James McCann, someone like that in that range. I'm probably more aggressive dropping someone like that for out a month than I would be someone I spend a little more draft capital on. So it's a close in between there. But yeah, I'm not taking zero for a month at catcher. That's for sure.
Yeah. I like McCann, by the way. I think he belongs in that Murphy tier. But yeah, really? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I like that. That's a good point. I just scrolled down and picked someone, another tier behind Murphy. But
sure.
That's good. Yeah, he mashed last year. There's no doubt.
Yeah, gonna play a lot.
So yeah, I mean, and the key is grind it out. I know it gets tough. The summer's long in baseball, and there are Sundays where I'm like, I just you know, I love doing FABs. I'm a little bit weird that way. I know a lot of people hate doing it and don't play as many leagues. I love sitting down on Sunday and trying to figure out my team. It's like the most challenging, fun part of this to me. So
sure.
I'm a little weird that way, and I get that. I think some people think it's kind of like work, but I just, you know, I kind of look at it as an escape from work. A couple hours I can just kind of spend looking and thinking about baseball. So I love it, but you just got to do it. And like the Sunday, the Mondays and Fridays, make sure you know who's starting. Like if you have a guy with three games and he's sitting the first game, he's a fringy guy, like that matters too. Like, so, you know, RotoWire has a great lineup tool too. I mean, it's one of those things with the guys I write out in fringy, I put a little check mark if they're starting, I put an X if they're not. And if they're not starting that first game, suddenly that becomes a two game week. And I that's someone that I'm looking to get out if I can.
Sure.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. And, you know, you can save a lot of points just optimizing with the hitters like that.
You really can.
And we get stuck with a lot of like Monday injury announcements. And so you can't necessarily fab correctly for it,
right.
But you can set your lineups correctly for that.
Yep. It's very true. And with the Friday moves, you know, if someone gets hurt on Tuesday and they're day to day, we have the ability to get them out, which is a great improvement to the game. Whereas, you know, someone got hurt on a Tuesday and they sprained their ankle, you miss them the whole week. That was the worst.
Yeah. Before we get to closers, one other point I want to make is like knowing your fab, going back a little bit, know your fab rules really well. For instance, in FBC, $1,000 fab budget, $1 bids, no $0 bids. When you're out, you're out.
That's very important. There's a lot of leagues that do zero bids, and the FBC does not. You're out, you're done. That's a good point.
Tout Wars, there are $0 bids. There's also IR spots, IL spots, excuse me. Won't be the first or last time I did that, but my home league, we have $0 bids, but we have no IL spots. Labor, $100 budget, not $1,000. There's trades in the league, but no trading of fab.
Okay.
So you're out, you're out.
Oh, no
so,
$0 bids though either. All right.
No $0 bids. And it's a lot, you know, it's less, you know, you're losing an order of magnitude there. So, you know, a $3 bid there is like, ooh, okay, it's like a 30, but it's really worse because you can, you know, you don't get 3.5 in there. You don't get 3.2. You know, you can't kind of get the sneaky little, add-ons or subtractions. But so, and that's where I really have a leak in fab. I find myself running out too quickly. Instead of like $2 on my speculative closer, I'm bidding $5 to $7, and those add up. I mean, they, you know, you find yourself in July and you've got $10 left. You're like, ugh.
I know.
The Brian Cranston GIF.
And that's essentially, you're going to pick up like eight guys and they're not, none of them are the ones you want, because you're going to get outbid on everybody you want at that point.
Yeah. How am I winning this this great pickup, Steve Cishek bid? I'm brilliant. I got him. Oh, we got.
At least you pick a random player who's still in the league, so I'll give you props for that, as opposed to Ted Lilly. Last thing I'll ask, and people always ask me, how much do you, what do you do in September? We talked about this on a couple of panels that I've done. There's no like concrete answer to how much money you want to have for the last month, but my number I usually ballpark to hope for is about $75. I want to be able to use $20 a week, and if I need to bid $20 on a two-star pitcher or a hitter that gets called up or someone that falls in some starting spots and stealing bases, I want to be able to outbid somebody if I need to.
Yeah, I think it makes perfect sense. I think it's a big leak not to have FAB in September, especially because the rosters are so fluid. And the information is scarcer too. So
I've lost leagues by not being able to outbid the team that's ahead of me or right behind me in September, and it's a frustrating feeling.
Yeah, it's a bitter pill to swallow.
It is. So let's jump into the closer market for the second half here. Just a note first from our sponsor, AutoNew. AutoNew Fantasy Baseball is the next level fantasy baseball challenge you've been looking for. Experience a year-round dynasty competition with deep rosters. Accumulate prospects to lead your team in the future or to move for a superstar at the trade deadline. Keep your baseball mind engaged in the offseason with trades and arbitration. Learn more about why everybody who plays AutoNew becomes addicted at AutoNewBaseball.com. That's O-T-T-O-N-E-W Baseball.com. AutoNew, it's just better fantasy baseball. So, Jeff, I have the closers kind of broken down by ADP tiers, and I moved a couple guys up and down just because I can kind of see the trends, how they're going. So that's just how I did this. But the first tier we have these top five guys, ADP 50 to 100. Josh Hader and Liam Hendricks are kind of the top two. Then Chapman and Diaz, and then kind of Raisel Iglesias, your boy from ex-Cincinnati, has been moving up into those guys. Just from a strategy standpoint, as you're going to, say, a 15-team league, say, call it the main event, whatever you want to call it, are you planning on getting one of these top fives? Are you kind of seeing how the draft values closers? Do you have a strategy for a top-tier closer as we're kind of moving towards the big drafts here?
Yeah, I mean, I've played it a couple different ways. So, like, I did a 12-teamer. You know, the 12 versus 15 really matters here. So
it does.
Week and a half ago, I did beat Jeff Erickson, 12-teamer, RotoWire Online Championship, and I took Liam Hendricks. Now, of course, some of that was because he was near his max pick.
Okay, I was going to say, was that your plan going in, or you just it was max pick, and you're like,
it was a good
pick here.
It was like, hey, this is a great value, and let's try it. And the thing that I stumbled upon is I really liked doing it. It really was nice because I didn't feel this urge to get a second and third that I could take speculative chances late. I'm getting – you know, I think there are very few guys I feel comfortable with in this pool this year. There may be seven or eight guys that I feel comfortable, and there's only like four or five that I feel very comfortable.
Yeah, I jumped it to like 12 total, and that's like including guys that I'm not really comfortable with. It's a very thin pool. After about 12, it gets really ugly.
And the added benefit, and this is not a strategic benefit so much as how it makes you feel benefit. I think I talked about this before.
It does. It really makes you just feel a lot more free to do what you want in the rest of the draft.
That, and you don't care when everybody else takes it closer. You're
it's
like,
beautiful, isn't it?
No, I mean, you know, I've got my guy. Now, of course, he eggs in one basket, he gets hurt, forgets how to pitch. That happens with closers, allegedly, sometimes. But then again, any player has that sort of risk, the performance side of risk there. But I don't feel that way about Hader. I just, usage-wise, I know he's like the ceiling is so much higher because all the K's, right? And because of, but at the same time, the Brewers, I mean, rumors were that they were dabbling him in trade talks. Now, granted, he's probably going to close for whoever he gets traded to, but they also kind of in the past, the way he's been used, you know, two innings here, and then he's off for 2 days, that sort of thing. Now, granted, those two innings might be worth more because he's getting you 5 K's in that outing. And, you know,
every time, yes.
And that you get 5 K's twice in a week. Well, okay, that's fine. And you get one save and one win. Yeah, I'll take that. You got to do the math on that though. But you know, you're using roster spots on closers that you need to get the saves. Yeah. I mean, it's a category we play in. In the 15, however, I might not. You know, I think there's a lot more opportunity cost. I think this is also where draft position matters too. If you're in my preferred position in the 15s, especially, is the middle of the draft. 8, 9, 7, 6. You know, you're not going to get as trapped by the runs as you are when you're on one of the ends. In TGFBI, I was in the 2 spot. I am in the 2 spot. We're still ongoing. I had a chance at Hendricks at 5.2, which would have been pick 62. Perfectly acceptable price, but I'm waiting 28 more picks, and I'm going to give up a lot. Like, I took Voit instead. You know, missing all these bats, and I wanted the bat. I didn't want to give up. And then at 7.2, I had another chance to dip into that closer pool. And like, okay, here comes the run. If I don't take it now, it's now or never. Sure enough, the run came after that, but I did never. And I didn't take my first closer until round 14. I'm okay with that build too.
And it's funny because if you're at, like, say you're at the other end, say you're pick 14 or 15, you pretty much have zero chance to get Hendricks or Hader, because either you're gonna take, you have to take him at 45, 46, which you probably don't want to do. It's a little early. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, I mean, there's no way they're coming back to you at whatever that is, 75, 76. So it's weird. Like you right. say, part of the draft, like, there, guys like that might just be fully off the table to you, depending on where your draft slot is.
Right.
With Hader, the ADP is about 60, so that's like the 4-5 turn. There's enough I see in this profile. I think he's going to be fine, but there's enough I see in this profile that keeps me off of him. The K rate was still absurd last year, but it had dropped. It dropped down. It was 39% last year, which is still really good, but he was 46 and 48% the year before that. Walk rate jumped to 12.8%. He led 15 home runs in 2019. Barrel rate the last 3 years have gone 10.6%, 12.6%, 14.7%. These are all picking nits here. I mean, it's all little things. Hader's still really, really good. Strikes a ton of guys out. But at this, as the very top closer and somebody I'm using a fourth-round pick on, there's enough there that I'm a pass at the price.
I think I am too. Fastball dropped a mile from 95.6 to 94.6. Swinging strike percentage dropped from 23.7 to 16.7. Now,
23.7 is insane.
It's absurd. It's ludicrous. 16.7, by the way, is outstanding.
Yeah, really good.
But more so for a starting pitcher than a reliever. And, you know, that's one of some of the work that Alex Chamberlain's been doing, is he's getting granular, like, okay, on the, you know, what's the swing and miss for a fastball versus a slider, and for a reliever versus a starter? And you kind of have to dig into that sometimes. And the home runs have been there. Last year, he gave up plenty of homers again. He only gave up three last year. I lied. I'm good at lying like that, but
that was, you know, that was not very many innings.
Projects about to be about 10 on the season.
It does. And again, I think he'll be fine, but there's enough little things here that I see that I'm not willing to make him the closer. And the big problem for me is if he has any sort of hiccup or problem, they have an absolute freaking stud that could take over that's behind.
That's also true.
And, like, so when last year, the thing was, you and I talked about Hendricks a lot last year. And the thing that I really liked about Hendricks was, like, there was nobody behind him that was going to take the job, no matter how bad he was. Like, he'd have to get hurt or have a 9 ERA for Joaquin Soria or Lou Trevino to come take the job. Hader has a couple hiccups. Devin Williams come in there and get the job done pretty easily. And they're like, oh, you know, we can use Hader in the 7th, 8th inning and be really effective. There's just too many ways to go a little sideways. I think he'll be fine. Like I said, I'm just not doing it at the price.
Yeah, I kind of tend to agree with you, unless other people jump Hendricks ahead of him. And I still take Hader over the rest of the pool.
It's funny. Hader was the fourth closer taken in my TGFBI. And it got to the point where I was about to take him because I was like, oh, now I'm at a point where I think the risk is worth it. I think he went in the mid-70s, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at it to be precise. But you just he went after – I think he went after Chapman, Diaz, and Hendricks. And it got to the point where I was, you know – and I think a fade is – I'm a fade on Hader at the price, but there is definitely a price where I'm taking almost anybody. I'm not crossing anybody off because I'm fading them. It's just if the price gets a certain point, there is a point that I will take somebody.
Yeah, of course.
So the next two guys are Chapman and Edwin Diaz, and I'm going to throw Iglesias in that mix just to make it easy on the group. If you had to pick one of these three to kind of – you don't get the top two guys. You had to pick one of these three to really – you want to get a top-tier guy, or I can call him a second-tier guy, whatever you want to call him. Is there one of those three you really prefer over the others?
Chapman, I guess. But he just throws fewer innings every year. That seems a little bit of concern. Honestly, I don't take these three.
Okay.
I wait and take Rosenthal or Hand or Jansen instead.
That's a fair point. I'm just looking. Yeah. I actually passed.
Diaz, the skills are, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, you're good. You're good. I was just going back to Hader. I looked. He went 5-12 in my TGFBI.
Yeah. And you were sitting at.
I was 5-11. I went starter, but I would have taken him the next turnaround for sure. And I almost took him at 5-11. I came very close.
I think you should have, but side unseen. Now, who's your starter that you took there?
I took Sonny Gray.
Okay, I'm on board with that too.
As I did it, I was very close on it. I was like, I probably should just take the price on Hader here, but I only had one starting pitcher at that point, and I didn't love who was going to come around the turn. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it, but I strongly considered him, which is weird because a week before that, I'd said that he was on my fade list. So, but you know, it kind of works that way. I like Chapman in this group too. He's locked into the job, which is the most important thing. I mean, right. There's just, they have good guys behind them, but I think that he's the guy, and they've been very clear that he's their closer and he's their guy. Velocity's down a little bit, but everything else is still, I mean, the strikeout rate is still insane. He had a 20% swing strike rate last year, which was up from the year before, which is good. But he only threw 11 innings last year because he came off the COVID. But, you know, 42% whiff rate, and his fastball is wild. Like, you usually don't see that on a fastball. I think that's a 5-6 turn on Chapman is a good price, and I'd take him over Diaz. Diaz could be the best closer in baseball. He could be, who knows? It's just, he's hard to figure. There's anybody that tells you they know exactly what's going to happen with Edwin Diaz is crazy, because I think he'll be pretty good, and I feel pretty good that 2019 was kind of a fluky year, but I don't know. When that profile's there only a year ago, it still creeps up on you.
Yeah, Diaz, it's all about the extremes, right? Yeah. I mean, it's extreme strikeouts, extreme hard to hit, mm-hmm. but extreme walks.
Yep.
And, you know, and walks beget, like, home runs, because then you try to groove one, you know, not walk another guy. But, and we've seen him lose the job before, too. That's the other thing that worries me about Edwin Diaz, is that, you know, there is that memory, institutional memory of Edwin Diaz losing the job with the Mets.
And they have options behind him. There's guys they could go to, too.
Yeah, although Seth Lugo won't be ready for the start of the season, so that's one less possibility. But
they signed Trevor May.
They did.
Yeah,
they did.
The Mets also have
Dylan Betances still hanging around there.
Yep.
They have a deep, deep, deep team.
They do.
And that is one thing. I made the point on the hitting side of things, but it also applies to their bullpen. It's a deeper bullpen than they've had in the past.
I think that Raisel Iglesias is a bit better than I kind of remembered. He has an ERA under 3 in 4 of the last 5 years. Last year looked really good. That 2019 ERA kind of looks like a blip now when you look at his whole setup. But
right.
K rate was a career high last year at 34%. Swing strike was 18.6%, which it jumped from 15%. Mm-hmm. Never had a hard hit rate over 33%. Should have the job fully in Anaheim. I mean, they traded for him to have the job. He's a guy that's moving up, though. ADP is 92. I don't think he's going to get there in the main event.
Probably not. We often see some inflation there. But this year in particular with closers, I think we've seen other cases where the closer has been pushed down some. So it's some really conflicting data. But then again, main events are different than any other thing. You know, one negative is he does have Joe Maddon always trying to reinvent the game.
That is true.
Now, Maddon has said in the past he wants to use a full-time closer with him, but we'll see when push comes to shove, when he has two bad game outings in a row. Mike Myers has thrown bolts. I mean, last year was a disaster for this Angels pen, so I know they're thirsting for a stable closer.
Yeah, I think he's just a pretty solid guy, and I think he works fine at the price. I think he's got one of those guys that's just fairly priced. I think that if you want to take him there, I think that's fine. I have no issue with it. He's someone that I probably would take in the – I don't think I'd do it early 6th, where I think he'll end up going. If it was in the 7th, I'd probably do it, but he'd probably have to – he probably had to be at ADP or a little bit later for me to do it. But let's jump into this next tier, because this is the tier that I think, you know, is fascinating. You're going to have to try and find your guys this tier. ADP 100 to 150. We've got James Karinchak, hopefully I say that right, Brad Hand, Ryan Pressly, Kenley Jansen, Kirby Yates, and then I moved Rosenthal and Craig Kimbrell up to this round because I think in the main event or any kind of competitive leagues, they're going to be moving up these last couple of weeks.
They're already there.
Yeah, they are. Rosenthal is, and Kimbrell's on the move, but you're right. Yep. Rosenthal definitely is already there. I've seen some like 6th and 7th rounds on Rosenthal. So what do you do in this range? It's a weird mix. We've got like, you know, some injured guys coming back. We've got Rosenthal and Yates. We've got the old veterans in Kimbrell and Jansen. We've got Karinchak and Ryan Pressly, kind of the younger guys coming up. Or I guess Pressly's not that much, but Karinchak, younger guy. Then you got Brad Hand, who somehow had a 2 ERA as his velocity continues to drop. Who in this range? You say you don't get someone in the top tier. Is there someone you're really aggressively going at in this range? I think this is the range that you like to figure out who you want and kind of attack in the spot.
So, yeah, I think Rosenthal is someone I'm going after. I love how, you know, as much as the A's have this reputation of devaluing closer by trading him away and using random people there, lately, at least under Melvin, he finds a guy and he sticks with him.
And even when they trade him the year after, like it's coming off good years. Like even like Billy Koch and Keith Foulke like had good years there. They're a team that, you know, great ballpark to pitch in, great defense playing behind them. They've got two gold glovers in the infield, and Elvis Andrus is a really good defensive shortstop.
Yep.
We think he still is. He's getting up there in age, but a really good team to pitch for. I think the Rosenthal is going to be the helium guy. I think we might see him kind of up near Iglesias by the time we draft late in March.
I have him ahead of Iglesias
All
now.
Right. There you go.
I am the helium guy with him.
Nice. Where are you willing to take the stand and take him?
I think I take him ahead of Iglesias. I put him in that upper tier. So 7th okay. round, I take him.
All right.
I take him ahead of anybody in this tier, and I take him ahead of Iglesias and maybe Diaz.
Okay. You got a good chance to get him. You're in a very aggressive spot with him where there's a lot of people that like him, but you're right up there with him.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the thing is, if I'm taking a closer there, I'm taking him over Karinchak. I'm taking him over Kenley. I'm taking him over Yates for sure. I like Hand. I've warmed up to Hand. I thought that I'd be fading him because of the velocity, but I've dug in a little bit more, and he's just the end results have been so good. You know, either stat cast wise and just obviously saves, but that I'm better on him than I thought. And plus his velocity did pick up towards the end in September last year too, as opposed to the rest of the season. I'm pretty good on Presley too, to be honest. The fact that the Astros didn't go out and get anybody else.
Yeah.
They have some interesting young arms.
You see his quote this week? His quote was weird.
What was the quote?
And I think he was just trying to be team guy, but they said, you know, are you fired up at being the closer? And he's like, I'm just here to pitch. I don't care who closes. I just want to do my job and kind of get guys out. It felt to me like I want to be the team guy, do the right thing. But I don't know. Do you want your closer to be like, yeah, I want the ball in the ninth? Next question.
It might just be he just doesn't want to make waves.
I think that's what it was too. But
I think it's just a throwaway.
Yeah.
And I need more context to think of that. But besides, it's not like there's a job battle there.
There isn't.
There's not. He is the closer. I think we should not overthink it. I go Rosenthal, Hand, and Presley. I used to have Kenley above a couple of those guys. I'm kind of pushing him down just a little bit. Through today a little, I think it was like 89 to 90 today for Kenley. But, you know, you don't want to read too much into early March velocity.
Working on mechanics too, which never is a great thing to see either. But yeah. I want to talk about Kenley, but I want to talk about Karinchak first. This is obviously a guy that's very hyped. People love him. He's about 100, ADP is about 100. It's 101 somewhere in there. The K rate was flat out elite last year, 48.6%, just a bonkers K rate. But the walk rate was 14.7%. So there's a lot of command stuff there. Yeah. He's had issues with walks in the minors. It's not like it was a weird thing where that was a big jump, but he hasn't done that before in the short season. He should be the guy with Hand gone, but like you hear quotes from Francona and they talk about how we're going to use guys in high leverage. I don't really think he's like a locked in ninth inning guy. And at pick 100, I need a guy that I'm pretty sure is going to come in out of the bullpen in the ninth inning.
I agree with that. And the X factor is ownership is uber cheap. And you think that they maybe want to tap down on his, you know, tap down on that arbitration value of his coming up soon in like a year or two. Well, give him fewer saves. You know, I see the Cleveland making like forcing Terry's hand with that. And even if he wanted to make him the full-time closer. So I could see that being a possibility. So Whitgren might get a few here, Class A might get a few here and there. Although, you know, let's see Class A pitch first before, because he's, you know, obviously missed all of last year. So
Whitgren's been pretty good for 3 years in a row. I mean, that's an arm.
Yeah, he's a good pitcher.
Yeah, I think he's a pretty solid enough pitcher I don't get the price on Karinchak. I mean, I get that he's electric. The stuff's electric. I just think the job issues plus the walks, I just can't do it at the price. I don't think he's going to end up on any of my teams as long as the ADP stays where it is.
Yeah, I mean, you could make us look silly, especially with those
for
K's.
Sure. Electric stuff. He's fun to watch. He's electric. I just don't think – I don't feel that he's like a come in the ninth inning, get all the saves guy right now.
Yeah. I'll say this, though. I mean, as long as I think it's more damaging to spend an early pick on a closer and have him blow up or in a bad way than it is to miss on a guy that's a really good closer. I mean, I remember Edwin Diaz – you know, when he had that massive year for the Mariners, you know, set the saves record, all that. You know, I did the dug into like the numbers.
I remember and, that,
like,
yeah.
Of the top 20 teams in the main, I think only one guy had them. And it was like, okay. Okay. I thought that would be like one of those, okay, he's going to be on a lot of those teams. Right. But there were more people who did the pickup Bud Norris that did well in the top 20 because he had like 25, 30 saves that year for the Cardinals. You know, that was more important than nailing Edwin Diaz because of the draft capital.
Yeah.
And that's why on the 15s, I'm more inclined. I might miss this. I might just skip this entire tier too. We'll see. Unless one of them that I like falls to closer to pick 150 also, you know, ninth or 10th round, then I'll start thinking about it.
Where do you fall on Kenley right now? It's weird. Like you watch him and he's just not the same. And I think in our head, like, we expect that elite guy. The last 3 years have been good, like a regular good and not the elite guy that he was. But like you look at his StatCast page, for instance, he's over the 90th percentile in exit velocity, hard hit rate, ex WOBA, ex ERA, ex batting average, and ex slug and barrel rate. Like seven categories in 90th percentile. I was kind of shocked by that when I looked at it. He throws his cutter 60% of the time, 27% whiff rate on that. The fastball gets a good whiff rate too when he throws the sinking fastball. A lot of fly balls last year, which kind of freaks me out because he's had some home run issues. But maybe the dead ball helps out a little bit. Not a lot of hard. He's always a good hard contact guy. He's been under 30% every year. He's 14% last year. Granted, small sample, but still pretty impressive. He's a guy that I can make a case for either way, and the ERA is now between, he's like a 3-4 ERA guy rather than a 1-2 ERA guy, but if he didn't lose the job last year, I don't think he's going to lose the job. It seems like Robert's really loyal and committed to him.
He was good in the regular season. We always That's remember the playoffs.
Yep. And his ERA was 3.33. He wasn't elite Kenley, but still really good.
His swinging strike rate was 16.4%.
Yeah.
Josh Hader was 16.7%.
Yep.
For a guy that, Kenley didn't lose any velocity last year or the year before. He lost it from 2017. It's down a mile from that, but he's learned how to pitch like that.
I think we have to just recalibrate who we think he is because he's a different guy now and he's just good instead of great.
Yeah, I ended up with him a couple times early on, and the only thing I didn't like is I didn't back him up with Trinan, but these were DCs, so it's back upable.
Right.
But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the closer that's still left in the ninth or tenth round in the main of that group. Well, I'll take him, sure.
Yeah, I think I got to the point where I think I'm fine taking him. Whereas I kind of jumped into it thinking I don't really want Kenley anymore. But I think you're right. I think ninth round, if I don't have a closer, I think that he's someone that I'm fine with. I do like Rosenthal too. How do you feel about Kirby Yates these days?
I just don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weirdly, there's not very much news on him in spring training either. Before we did this, I kind of searched for some stuff and there's not really a lot there. He hasn't pitched. He's kind of thrown some bullpens, but there's not a lot of updates on how he looks or anything. I think I agree with you. I think I need to see some stuff before I decide where I put him. Because obviously I ended up with him in TGFBI in the 10th round. And he was kind of my closer too. And there's kind of the ADP. And
a lot of good players in the 10th round.
There are. It could backfire big time or... in 2019, he was the best reliever in baseball. So whole world of outcomes on Yates.
Yeah, this is where I'm kind of someone else could get the windfall over me. If he falls, great. But I'm not there. I'm just not there.
And I think a little bit of that difference between a league where you're not paying and you're playing for kind of an overall prize and you're just taking a shot where – if I'm putting a bunch of money in the main event, I don't know if I'm entrusting it to Kirby Yates like I would in a league where I'm kind of just shooting for upside.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Let's jump down a tier. We've hit a bunch of these guys. I do like Presley also. I just wanted to note that he's a guy that I'm definitely willing to take in that spot. You like Handel a little more than I do, by the way. 150 to 200. There is nobody in this range that is locked into their job and good skills. You can find something wrong with all these guys. Both Twins guys are in here, Alex Colomé and Taylor Rogers. I moved Taylor Rogers out of here. He seems like he's slipping in a lot of drafts. Colomé was great last year with ERA and saves and all that. I'm still not buying. I just don't like the profile.
It's nervous. It's enough to make you nervous. The fact that they have multiple options, good options in that bullpen is scary, including Rogers, who is following, and I think justifiably. I don't think Rogers actually had all the good skills there last year either. But, and the fact that Baldelli is the manager and he's from the Rays tree, and that is enough. That's
pretty
scary. And
he's already said they're going to both finish games, and I just
yep.
Man, I don't need to turn on the TV in the ninth inning and see the wrong guy come in. That's just so maddening. Yeah. But then on the flip side, we have someone like Nick Anderson, who we're pretty sure is not going to be the guy that's coming in the ninth inning, but the skills are just beyond elite. He was a 0.55 ERA. I know he had a little issue in the playoffs, but he had a 44.8% K rate last year and a 5.2% walk rate. Talk about a guy that Ks everybody and doesn't walk anybody. That's just an insane combo. Only had six saves, though, and he only had one in the playoff run. They had seven as a team. He only had one of them. So it's very clear that the way the Rays run it, he's not going to get – I think that I don't know what your projection is, but I would say a 12 to 15 saves is probably a pretty good mark to throw in for him. He'd be a top five closer with the full-time job for sure, but
yeah.
He's so good, but it's so hard to take him because if you're going to take him in this spot, it's the 11th round. You're certainly going to want some saves out of your guy.
Yeah, he is the A number one argument for doing saves plus holds instead of saves.
Yep.
The other thing I don't like about him is he just doesn't throw that many innings. As much as the lead is everything, all the ratios are, last year was great. He was amazing. He had 26 strikeouts. Okay, because he threw 16 innings.
Right.
And they were early on, especially, they were really treating him with kid gloves. He would do like two thirds of an inning outings here and there. Like, let him finish the inning. And just that's just them. And I think, you know, the full season, they could have like 15 guys get saves this year. It'd be fun. Let's set a record.
And they're almost doing it on purpose now just because they know they should. But and then you get a 44.8% K rate with Anderson, and Devin Williams laughs at that because he had a 53% strikeout rate last year.
The airbender is awesome. It's so fun.
0.33 ERA. He had where is it here? He had a 0.32 batting average and slugging against his changeup last year. A 0.32 slugging is just absurd. And now he has 61% whiff rate with his changeup. He hit two singles on his changeup all year long in 27 innings.
That's just ridiculous.
He's insanely good. But again, we had pick 180. You're using a 12th round pick on someone that probably doesn't get very many saves.
Yeah. Now, in contrast to Anderson, he threw 27 innings last year.
Yeah.
So that's like, you know, you could see a world where he gets 80 innings.
I mean, if he throws 80 innings, you probably don't need more than 10 saves for him to work at the price.
And you might get more wins, too.
Yeah, that's true, too.
That's the other thing, too, about that. But, yeah, it is really nerve-wracking to take a reliever that doesn't get saves in the 12th round.
I mean, you're taking some of the 12th round that you're not counting on for wins or saves is tough to stomach.
Yeah, it is. I haven't done it yet this year.
I haven't either. So then we get down to someone that, you know, has the job, but it's kind of an okay pitch. You get Rafael Montero. Seattle traded for him, presumably to close. He missed 2018. He only threw 29 innings in 2019. Then he came back last year. He was 8-for-8, I believe, for saves for Texas. He threw 17 innings. K rate was solid. Walk rate was solid. He was kind of, you know, solid there. A lot of hard contact, though. It kind of scares me a little bit. 43.5% hard hit rate. Barrel rates the last 2 years were 13.9%, 15.2%, giving up a ton of rockets. 54% fly ball guy last year, which is really scary, those hard numbers, although it was pretty elevated from 2019. We still have a lot of innings to go on with Montero. He's got 46 innings the last 3 years. ADP is 192. If you're looking for a second closer, is Montero someone that you're jumping on at all?
I mean, the price is okay. Because I don't really see too many challengers to him. I don't think this, and this is another team that recycled a ton of different relievers last year, and it had to be exhausting. Managers don't want to have to make these decisions like this.
Yeah.
So I think they'd love for him to just be the guy, but yeah. I mean, I got him. I have him in the keeper league, and that's the only place I have him so far. I haven't gotten him in any of my redrafts this year.
I did not know Scott Servais was still their manager. I thought they'd move someone else, but apparently he still is. It's funny. I wrote down decent price, which is kind of what you said. I think he's got a lot of blow up potential, though. It kind of scares me.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to end up with him as my. I want someone else as my second closer, and I don't know. I think there's a little too much scary here, and not enough innings to fall back on the last 3 years. There's a little too much unknown for me.
Yeah, I think there's not enough distance between him and the next tier to spend that draft cost on him.
But it's funny, as you can see, after we get past that second tier, I mean, there's you know, scars on all these guys. There's nobody here like, oh, this is easy. I'll take this guy right here. However, I do like Richard Rodriguez, but the Pirates are going to be terrible. He's going to get traded at some point. But, I mean, the guy was really good last year. 36.6% strikeout rate after he's 22% in 2019. He was a 35 strikeout to 5 walk guy in 2020. The dude was so good last year. Mm-hmm. Swinging strike was 15%. A lot of hard contact, but, you know, when you strike out that many guys, it doesn't worry me as much. He did change his pitch mix a little bit. He threw twice as many sliders last year, and he had a 63% whiff rate in his slider. Like, his slider was nasty last year. I don't know. His ADP right now is 226. I don't think there's a chance in hell that he gets that in the main event. I think he's probably a 180 to 190 guy.
Right.
So probably 12, 13, kind of with Montero, with Williams and Colome and Nick Anderson. I'm taking him over those guys, I think, but I'm very scared of the Pirates.
Yeah, I'm not scared.
The Pirates are trading him more than him than being
yeah, bad. Yeah, and trading him to a team that doesn't need a closer.
Exactly.
Course, right. I think that's – but you can Shane Greenham. I mean, you know, crappy team, but he's the guy. And he's 31 years old. He's not someone that they're going to try to like, oh, we got to make sure we like, you know, manage him so we can get him cheaper in arbitration. They want him to, they actually probably want him to get saved so they can kind of trade him easier. Not that most major league GMs will – actually use the saves as an evaluative tactic, but if he's good in high pressure situations, yeah, it's easier to highlight how good he is. So
sure.
I actually think they'll actually kind of max him out. And there again, there's nobody else. I mean, until they find somebody.
Thing. Like Kyle Crick walked everybody last year. Chris Stratton, Michael Feliz, maybe, but there's not a lot here that you're like worried about someone. There's not someone like they're grooming to take over the role, which you'd be
that's
worried
right
about. Yeah,
that's right.
There's no Devin Williams behind Richard Rodriguez. Is kind of what it comes down to. But yeah. I think his price doesn't move a lot. I think it's going to move by the main event, but it doesn't move very much. He's a guy that I'll probably have on my closer two on a bunch of teams.
Yeah, I can see it.
So as we go down to the 200s, we get guys that, you know, you got to take speculations. We got Taylor Rogers. We talked about him a little bit already. We got Will Smith in Atlanta. We have Drew Pomerantz, Matt Barnes, Jordan Hicks, Greg Holland. Who do you like down here? If you get stuck, you got one closer. You got to find your second guy here in the 14th, 15th, 16th round. Who are you jumping to? Mine is probably Archie Bradley in this range, but who are you looking at?
We've never been hurt by Archie Bradley. You can never go broke investing in him.
He was pretty good for us last year.
No, it's just that he's been freed of Torey Lovallo. But
yeah, he's certainly it won't be the first year that Archie Bradley is someone that I'm thinking about taking. But
I've landed on him in this range. Yeah. I've landed on him. Jordan Hicks I've gotten a couple of times. Hicks is a target for me.
You think how certain do you think that he's the guy?
Well,
because Gallegos is really good
on opening
too.
Day.
Yeah.
50% at, okay. But by May 1st, I'd ratchet that up to about 80%, maybe 85.
I kind of wish Gallegos wasn't as damn good as he is.
Yeah, I know.
But they didn't use him in the last year either, really. Like,
that's the thing.
They don't seem like they want him to. Like, if they wanted to be the guy, he just would have been the guy last year, right?
Right.
That's weird.
I mean, they did everything they could to not let him be the guy. Now, granted, he had COVID last year, too. Yeah, he was one of the COVID guys.
The Cardinals, the Cardinals were a mess overall, yeah.
Yeah, so it's hard to kind of figure it out. But in TGFBI, I waited entirely on closers. 14.14 was my first closer, and that was Hicks.
Okay.
I followed that with Drew Pomerantz at 15.2 and backed him up with Melanson at 17.2. So, and watching Emilio Pagan go crazy. But
so what you want there is you want either Pomerantz or Melanson to just take over the job so you can use one of them. Because you don't want to use both of them or have to guess, but... You got both of them,
I could. In a 15-teamer, you can.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you probably don't want to do it every week, but yeah, a lot of weeks you can. And Pomerantz is tough because, I mean, they don't – it's another guy that, like, they don't really seem like they want him to be the closer. Like, they could have done it last year, and they brought in Melanson this year. But, I mean, you talk about a guy that's been awesome since he's been a reliever. His ERA was, like, 1.5 last year. Ever since they moved to the pen in late 2019, he's a completely different guy. I mean, his velocity is up to 95. He was, like, low 90s as a starter, so he's a completely different guy when he gasses out in the bullpen. He's really, really good, and I love him as a pitcher right now. I didn't like him as a starter very much, but you want to go pitcher-wise, he's really good. 15th round, I really have no idea if he's going to get the saves or not. I mean, they got Pagan, they got Melanson. They could play a lot of lefty-righty kind of stuff in there. I just worry that, you know, he might get 8 saves.
Yeah, that's possible, but, you know, if I have them both, well, that's fine and good ratios. But, yeah. I think you can get the combo of Will Smith and Chris Martin pretty affordably.
I love Chris Martin's like my late in the draft guy that I love.
Oh, I love him too.
Yeah.
I think he's great. And you don't have to have Smith to go get Martin.
No, I'm planning on getting Martin without Smith.
But I think Smith will be better this year. He was another guy, had COVID, you know, joined late, took a while to get a feel for a pitch.
He was super lucky last year too. 121 BAP and 100% strand rate.
Is that good?
Yeah. That works out well. And he still had a 4.5 ERA. Like, it still didn't really work that well. But 45% heart rate, 15% barrel rate. But, like, you look at his old numbers and, like, it's so much better than that. I think you're right. I think he's one of those guys with a COVID late start things. You got to take a lot of that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
He's been a good pitcher for a lot of years.
And he's got the contract, too.
Yeah.
And so that comes in. I'm not touching Matt Barnes.
I was gonna ask you about Baltimore next. I mean, it's weird. Him and Ottavino are almost like the same guy. Like, a lot of strikeouts, but just a ton of walks. That's just going to be one of those things. I think they might go back and forth based on who's hot, who's not walking guys.
Ryan Brazier. Watch. You know,
oh, it'll
finally be the year that this
had him
through.
Everywhere
awesome.
2 years ago, too. And
they
had that first save. We thought we were geniuses, and that lasted about a week. There's enough on Barnes I saw last year that I didn't like. His swing strike rate actually fell 3% last year.
Yeah.
His K's actually, his K's are always really good. They fell from 38 to 30%. There's enough there that with all those walks, I am not. I would take Ottavino later, way before I take Barnes at his price.
Same. I'm in the same boat there. I would take Crichton later than taking Soria early. it might be Tyler Clippard for all we know.
I don't.
It might be all three. Troy Lovallo is becoming Gabe Kapler.
I don't think you want Joaquin Soria.
I don't either. I don't either.
K's down, walks up, swing strike rate down. His fastball fell 10% whiff rate last year. I think we might have seen a little bit of the start of that cliff with Joaquin Soria last year.
I think you're probably right about that. On a similar note, I like Pete Fairbanks late. You know, I think they want him to close. You know,
he had three saves in the playoffs.
He's a little too walky, but you know, at the same time, you're not paying the price for him.
What do you do if you have one closer, you need a second one, and you see Greg Holland sitting in front of you? Do you think about jumping there at all?
I really don't.
Your face and noise is about how I feel right there.
He's a I streamed him late in like Yahoo Friends and Family last year, and it worked out.
He was actually pretty good last year. Like his swing strike was 13%, which I was shocked it was that high. K rate was 27%. He was able to drop the walks, which is key. Like the 2018, 2019 big ERA jumps were because of a lot of walks. But I feel like you're on a razor thin line with Holland. I mean, he goes back to walking guys. He's gonna get lit really fast. They have some good arms behind him too. That's that close. Like just
big thing.
Stamont, and then there's a couple guys there that they could end up with the job. That dude does worry me a little bit. Where I like guys that don't have any kind of studs behind them.
Yeah, I was just going to say, they have lots of live arms in their bullpen. Stallmont,
Scott Barlow's good, too.
Take a look at Jesse Hahn's numbers last year, by the way.
I don't want to. He was on the A's, and he was terrible. I know. He was really good last year as a reliever.
Do you know how good he was?
I do. I forget. ERA was under one, right?
17.1 innings, four hits, one earned run.
Four hits? What the hell was his BABIP then? 125.
It's got to be.
I found it. 108. My God.
Yeah. 108. However, only 8.2% swing and miss,
and a 12% walk rate.
Yeah. The regression monster's coming. But to what? I mean, the thing is, yeah. When you're, you know, maybe just he's good at not allowing hard contact. That could be it. Thing. And they even signed Wade Davis.
Did they really? Wow.
Get the band back together here.
I can't believe Jesse Hahn's throwing 95. What the heck is that? That's ridiculous.
But, you know, he's not a starter.
Yeah, so. No, it's true. He gasses out. I still like, we mentioned, I like Archie Bradley in this range. I think he'll be solid. I think that Hector Neris is bad enough last year that I think that Bradley will at least start out with a job. Real quick, what do you do with your Reds? Do you think it's Amir Garrett? You think Lucas Sims? How do you feel on the Reds?
65% Garrett, okay. 25% Sims, 10% the field. Field is probably not, that includes Lorenzen if he doesn't win the starting job, or Antone if he doesn't win the starting job. Please be Antone.
Does anybody in the Reds not throw 112? My God. Hunter Green was throwing 103 the other day.
Yeah, Hunter Green, he just needs to learn how to pitch, but man, he was the second overall pick. I mean, he's supposed to be able to do that sort of thing.
But Antone's throwing 99, 102.
He's throwing 97 and 99 with a sharp break on a slider against the Dodgers. Give me TJ Antone all the time.
You're the Reds fan. What do you think his role ends up being?
Starter eventually.
He started. Okay.
Maybe not. He may not begin the year as a starter. Okay.
But eventually he's not 2022. You think this year?
You're right. I think the Wade Miley thing has to run its course. Yeah. And there was a note the other day that said that Lorenzen is the leading candidate for the fifth starter's job. But Antone, I want to see his next couple starts or next couple of outings and see how well how they stretch him out. Because they need to get him as many innings as possible. He's very good at pitching, and I want that. But I like Garrett. The way they've used him in the past is kind of scary. Sims is obviously behind. He hasn't pitched in a game yet because he had the elbow stuff in January and February. So that's something to watch for. But I think there's going to be enough saves there. It's going to be worth paying attention to.
Do you have any feel for the Texas guys, whether it's Jose Leclerc, who threw two innings last year and walked everybody in 2019, or someone like Jonathan Hernandez, who was pretty darn good last year?
Give me Hernandez for the price. Every
me too.
Time.
Yeah, I'm not taking Jose Leclerc at the ADP as my second closer. I'm just not doing it.
I'm just not taking him. Yeah, he's not on my list.
Any Daniel Bard love with that cool comeback story?
It's a Rockies closer, so I mean, you don't really want to have to take him, but you know, he's gonna have. You know what? If you're lacking a third closer, sure, I guess.
Pretty damn fun. He came back last year after 7 years, throwing 97 though.
Right. Still walking guys.
Yeah.
That kind of concerns, but not like, you know, Steve Blass walking guys or anything, or old Daniel Bard for that matter. But I don't know. I probably won't have him too frequently. You have any feel for the Marlins situation?
I mean, they say it's Anthony Bass, right? I guess that if I get stuck down here, maybe I want to jump a third closer. I mean, Bass is serviceable, I guess that was what I call it. I mean, if they want to go with him, you know, the K rate's low. The walk rate is a little elevated, not too bad. But you're talking about a guy ERA under 3.5 or under 3.6 last 3 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And
it's hard to get
about organization. Don Mattingly here, too. He doesn't necessarily have to have the best reliever close. Yeah. See also Brandon Kinsler last year.
I mean, if you can get nine saves out of him in, you know, 7-8 weeks, and then kind of maybe it doesn't work out, you go somewhere else. I mean, I'd jump on that right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You just don't want a guy that gets one save, you start chasing it, and then he gets blown up in his next two outings.
Yeah.
That never happens. Like, you know, the Giant, every Giants pitcher.
I was going to say, do you jump in on Jake McGee at all late?
He was in my queue when he got snagged in TGFBI. He was probably my pick at the end of the 22nd, I think, maybe. I wanted him and didn't get him. It was either 22nd or 24th. I forget. But, I think he's my favorite to begin the year as the closer. I think Reyes Maranta is interesting as well. And I think Matt Whistler is also a tiny bit interesting.
I just think Maranta walks too many guys.
That's possible. And I think
a 13% and 14% walk rate the last 2 years. I don't know. I can't do it. I don't think.
I just think I want to be never Kapler. Also,
I think that's a fair way to put it. And what I gather from talking about all these guys is the back half of teams. You know, maybe the last 15 teams. There's going to be a ton of committees and upheaval and job changes, and you know they're going to have six guys get saves. It's not going to be the Rays for all these teams, but there's going to be a lot of movement. There's a lot of teams that have like two guys, and they'll probably settle on one. You know, the Cardinals will probably end up with one. The Red Sox might end up with one. There's a lot of these teams that, but they're so close, and there's not like an obvious, like you look at Ottavino and Barnes, you're like, I don't really want either, but if one gets a job, they're certainly rosterable. So
yep.
I think you're going to have to be really vigilant on closers all year. I think that I want to get I'm probably going to cap it off as one of my top 10 guys in my rankings. I'm going to want to get one of those. And then I'm maybe willing to jump down to a Richard Rodriguez or Archie Bradley, someone there. My goal in main events is probably not going to get two studs, but to get one I feel pretty good about, and then one that is lower down that I can kind of squint a little bit and see them working out.
Yeah, I mean, the TGFBI was useful for you, like seeing how that plays out when you got two in the top 10. It sounds like you're not happy with the build. You felt like you're chasing?
You know, I didn't like it, and then I got enough starters late that kind of lasted to me that I ended up liking it. I thought I was going to be light on starting pitching, but it ended up I got a lot of the guys I like. That's not going to happen in the main event. There's a lot. I took Josh Lindrum and Ryan Yarbrough probably later than they'll go in late March. So there's mm-hmm. You can't count on that kind of. And it's just, you know, different the way people draft differently. It's not a good. It's not a right or wrong thing. It's just a lot of those guys that I like pitcher wise later targets are going to get pushed up, and I'm not going to be able to get them where I want to. There's a lot of good players in the 10th round, like you said, when I took Yates, and I probably. Where closers went, I'd probably wait and probably get Rodriguez or Bradley or someone like that. Maybe take a third guy, take a Bass or someone down there. Maybe you know, take a shot on Jonathan Hernandez or Chris Martin. Maybe someone down there. Maybe try and luck into a third rather than getting two. But I will tell you that not having to think about closer after round 10 was kind of fun.
Yeah,
I didn't even think about it for like 12 rounds until I got some speculative guys late. But it didn't even cross my mind, which is kind of a good feeling.
Yeah, I bet. I liked the 12. You know, 12 is way different than the 15, but I liked going with Hendricks. And then I didn't take another closer until all these spec. I got Chris Martin. I got Fairbanks. I got Sims. You know, like, and you know what? If they don't work, well, I can easily swap those guys out. It's not like I've invested a whole lot of draft capital in chasing this down.
In the 12er, you're going to get some chances in Fab, too. And the 15-teamer, that's right. What is that? Another 90 guys that are owned. A lot of those are closer to waiting. It's just a lot harder. You got three more teams to bid against. I find myself being a little more in a 12, being aggressive when getting one of the studs than being fine, kind of having to find my way through the second and third as the season goes along. I'm usually almost can always find someone that I want to take late. I want to get later in Fab or pick someone up later. People drop guys in those leagues. Like, you can usually find someone in July if you need a closer. It's just a different setup.
Yeah, 2019, the main event champ messed up the closers big time and
I remember that. Yep.
And he fabbed his way to being acceptable there. And that I've seen other, you know, like what, you know, the main event example I was talking about with Diaz and how that didn't really translate into being top 20 teams. So, you know, it never knows. It just seems
I've also seen a lot of teams die because they didn't have a second closer and they could have competed.
I've had a lot of teams die.
Overall and didn't because of that reason. So it goes both ways. But
for sure,
if you're great everywhere else, you can certainly make it work. But it's, I don't know, it's nice not to sweat the position. But it's funny. You talk about, you know, kind of building a team in TGFBI. I realize that stolen bases, I'm going to have to figure out a strategy because stolen bases are really hard.
Yeah.
I think we'll talk about that next week a little bit, kind of looking for mid to late round stolen base targets, because I found myself, you don't get those guys early, and I didn't. I got some power guys I really like, but it's hard to find guys, and you find there's four or five teams that need steals, and everybody's aggressive for those dudes.
Yep, for sure.
Cool. Anybody else closer-wise you want to talk about? I think we hit almost every team except for Baltimore, and I'm probably not going there either.
And Detroit. I think, remember, new manager there. So we'll see what they want. Hinch likes to kind of name a guy, but I don't know if he's there yet. Soto reported late, for instance. Is one of the things. So I think that'll take some time. But once he finds it, I think he'll stick with him. But he hasn't found it yet.
Yeah, I guess it's Gregory Soto or Brian Garcia, maybe the top front runner guys at the moment.
Or Cisneros, or it could be your boy Joe Jimenez after what a beautiful year he had last year. But
Brian Garcia had two more strikeouts than walks last year.
Yeah, that's not great, Bob. Not great.
I don't think I'm specking there is my answer there. But thanks, everybody, for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We do truly appreciate it. If you want to follow Jeff on Twitter, he's at Jeff_Erickson. I am at Scott Genstead. We'll be back at you actually next Monday. We're going to do a Monday morning. Is that right, Jeff?
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to be in beautiful scenic Wichita, Kansas next week and help my parents move. So we'll be doing Monday morning instead of Sunday night.
Yes, we will have a podcast, but it'll just be a few hours later than normal. So hang with us there, but it'll be up pretty soon on Monday morning. Other than that, hope everybody has a fantastic week. Take care. We'll be back at you next week.